Blog Talk Radio.
Paranexus Universe. Today is Thursday, May 27th, 2010. This is your host, Doug Kelly, here with my good friend and co-host, Grant Rubendunst.
Hey, everybody. Welcome. Ready for that long three-day weekend.
Yes, indeed. And we are in the process of trying to contact our guest tonight, who is going to be, or hopefully will be, Steve Hammonds. We're going to be talking about Operation Tango, Sierra, and Project Serpo. But until we get a hold of our guest, we're going to bring in our newest board member and call screener, John Rossi. Hey, John.
Hey, how you doing, Doug and Grant?
Good. You just kind of got drafted here at the last minute, so welcome, John.
Yeah,
nothing like being put on the spot, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, we only do it to the people we like the best.
And that's why you get paid all the big bucks for being a board member.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Comes with the territory of Paranexus. Big money.
Yeah, big,
yeah, there you
big
go.
Money. Oh, yeah. We're all so rich we can afford the luxury cat food.
Jets.
All right, so, you know, we're going to keep working on getting Steve, getting a hold of Steve. Something must have come up. I know he was planning on it, so he should be around shortly. I've corresponded with him
sure
several times.
You guys find Steve, what Steve has been working on, very interesting.
Yeah.
I stumbled across some articles a couple of weeks ago, and through Sharon's hard work, she was able to get in touch with him, and he wanted to come on the show. So for sure, it's just maybe a little minor mix-up, but he has some very interesting research that we really want him to come on the show and share with everybody.
So until we can get that part of the program going, John, you were recently on an investigation at Crystal Caverns, is that correct?
Yeah, last Saturday, and we did a follow-up actually last night because we had some rather unusual things happen to us Saturday night.
Is that something you can talk about or are willing to talk about?
Yeah. No, absolutely. Cool. We actually were working with another team, and when I do that, we end up splitting the teams and we have no contact during the investigation. That way, when things happen, you know, you can rotate another team in. They don't know what's happened, and you can see if, you know, things continue. At one point, we were in a section of the battlefield, and I saw something I've never seen in my entire life, and that was some kind of entity that was about 3 feet tall. It was all white. It was totally not human, and I ended up seeing it twice. And we were using a flare camera as well, and we were getting these weird temperature anomalies, and just when the camera was in the direction of where this thing was, it would, like, go out of focus. It was just very bizarre. So this went on for about 20 minutes, and then it stopped. So I had one of the other guys on our team go get this team we were co-investigating with, and asked them to just stay in the area and just, you know, conduct their investigation. Well, there was a psychic on their team as well, and the guy from my team is standing next to her, And all of a sudden, she jumps backwards, bumps into him, and almost knocks him over. And she's going, oh, my God, I've never seen anything like this before. And she also saw this entity. And pretty compelling because we both had the same experience, the same location within an hour. What's unique about this battlefield, besides having a history with haunted-related phenomena, there's also been reports of UFO activity. And I got to tell you, the thing that we were looking at totally did not look human. So I just don't know what it was.
You know, we're going to have to talk more about that. I'm going to have to get you on the show here, you know, and set aside some time. That sounds very interesting. As it turns out, Steve is now going to be available, so I just need to get him on the line. Thanks, John, for filling in that little bit, and I don't want to leave it at that. It's fascinating.
Yeah, we want to have you come back, John, and talk about that some more, because that is really fascinating stuff.
Oh, yeah, sure, anytime, and just feel free to drop me back into the basement.
Okay. You can go mute
all right.
yourself. All right.
Okay,
well,
thanks
so much,
guys.
All right, I appreciate that, and we're calling Steve now, and we'll let him come on.
This is Steve.
Hey, Steve, it's Doug Kelly. You're on the air. How are you?
Good, Doug.
Hey, yeah, we had a little mix-up on time zone stuff, and...
Yeah, it's six, a little after 6 in Phoenix, Arizona.
Yeah, so... Well, I'm glad we were able to get through to you. And,
yeah, that's great.
I'm here with Grant, co-host.
Okay, welcome to the show, Steve.
Hey, Grant.
I've been reading your articles on American Chronicle, and I really like them.
Good.
I'm so delighted you could come on the show tonight, and I'm hoping we'll get some time to talk about them.
Yeah, that's great.
And I paid him to say that, too, Steve.
It's all lies, Steve.
I think I paid him.
Oh, he got double paid.
I knew I was going to like you, Steve. I knew it wouldn't be any problem.
All right, since we've got
Welcome
you in the line, let's tell everybody a little bit about you. You've got a bit of a bio here. Let me just let you tell us about you rather than just read your bio. You're born and raised in Cincinnati, and then obviously now you're in Phoenix.
Yeah.
Tell us about your background.
Well, born and raised in Cincinnati, went to college at Ohio University, which is over in Athens, Ohio, near the in the southeastern Appalachian Mountain area of the state near West Virginia, and that's a nice little state university. Went out to the West Coast after college, lived in Southern California, mostly in San Diego for about 15 years, and I've been in Phoenix for about 15 years, too. Studied journalism at Ohio U, also some other coursework in psychology and different things, and have worked in the writing field and the communication field, and had a few different jobs over the years. And I, in recent years, I wrote my two novels, the first one, Mission into Light, and then there was a sequel, Light's Hand, and a couple guys and I have tried to turn it into a TV project, and we wrote a pilot script, and then I tried to convert it also into a movie screenplay, which we have. These are kind of works in progress. I also follow some of these leading-edge science topics, and as well as just conventional things that are going on in society. But the kind of the leading edge science things are pretty interesting, and I write about those quite a bit in my articles, as you know. And the novels and the screenplays and the TV pilot deal with those same type of topics, too.
Well, that's interesting. So tonight we're going to talk about Operation Tango Sierra and Project Serpo.
Mm-hmm.
So let's start. Do you have one that you want to tackle first?
Well, chronologically, Serpo came on the public scene first. That was several years ago, and for people who are not familiar with it, this information came supposedly through current and former Defense Intelligence Agency officials. The Defense Intelligence Agency is obviously an intelligence agency working out of the Pentagon as opposed to the CIA or some of the other national intelligence agencies. And I say supposedly because I have no way of knowing if this is true. I've approached it as a journalist and a reporter, and so in all my articles people will read, I'll say allegedly, reportedly, somebody claimed, somebody stated, or according to, which is kind of standard journalistic practice because I don't have any direct knowledge if it's true, not true, partially true, or there's truth woven between the lines or whatever. I have no way of knowing. But the story of Project Serpo is something that will resonate with people who saw Close Encounters of the Third Kind, and that is that team of red-suited people that were kind of shrouded in secrecy and they were transported to the secret landing site in Close Encounters, according to the Project Serpo story, that may have been based or was based on a true U.S. operation, and that 12 military people, after a exhaustive selection and screening and training process, were prepared to go on an exchange program with friendly extraterrestrials for a 10-year stay on their planet, and the U.S. had already developed communications and diplomatic relations and so forth with this certain friendly extraterrestrial group, and made arrangements for this that began in the 60s, and then by the mid-60s this mission got underway, and the mission actually lasted 12 years as far as them being away instead of 10, and two of the people perished on the mission, one through a medical condition on the way there and one from an accident on the other planet, and two chose to remain there rather than come back, and the others returned and have now all passed away.
Hmm.
That's the story. And this information was released through a fellow named Victor Martinez in the Los Angeles area who seems to have significant contacts and connections in the defense and scientific and intelligence communities. And again, I don't know for sure, but that's the Serpo story in a nutshell.
Okay, and just wanted to let our audience know that if you've got a question for Steve or a question about Project Serpo or Operation Tango Sierra, please give us a call. The number is there on your screen, 347-945-7799. You can also ask questions in the chat room, too. And if you have a Skype or rather a headset on your computer, you can use that Skype button to call in or just to click to talk, whatever appears there, if you'd like to call in through your computer. So, Steve, is there a connection? Let's go on and explain Tango Sierra then in a nutshell.
All right. And what's useful to know about this connection knowing that history of Project Serpo, and that was really I think that was late 2005, I believe, that information started surfacing. The same alleged contacts that released the information for Project Serpo, here we are 5 years later, more or less, released information about an activity called Project Tango Sierra to Mr. Martinez. And his alleged Defense Intelligence Agency contacts put him in touch with a third party who was not DIA. This individual supposedly was from another U.S. military or intelligence agency or activity of some kind that is not named in Victor's information release. And this story claims that it came to the attention of U.S. intelligence that a being who appears as a human, looks to be a human, had been making contact with a federal employee, a female federal employee, and there were some unusual things going on. I guess it might fall into the category of abduction, but maybe with a little different spin on it than we normally think of it.
Mm-hmm.
And according to this account, U.S. intelligence investigated it, questioned her, gave her all type of polygraph tests and so forth, determined that she was telling the truth, investigated and located this alleged extraterrestrial individual, detained the individual, questioned him. He was identified as a male.
Uh-huh.
He was told to leave and go back from whence he came, according to the report. So that story came out just this past April.
And when was this supposed to have happened?
I'm looking at the article. The original operation, I'm quoting from my own article, the original operation began in early 1980, and she had been abducted by this male non-human, is the terminology used, for the first time in 1977. So this had been going on from 77 through 80, or at least the U.S. intelligence began their activity, allegedly, in 1980.
And if I recall from your article, Steve, they had this person or this alien under surveillance for quite a while, right?
I'm not aware of this claim by this woman. I think mm-hmm. it was a story. The woman had mentioned this to some of her coworkers, and I don't know what federal agency she worked in. She's 23
mm-hmm.
years old, so
mm-hmm.
she's young.
Mm-hmm.
But one of her coworkers felt that this is something that should come to the attention of other authorities within whatever federal area she worked in. He started looking into it, so I'm not sure about when they got wind of this, when they started investigating, and when they started investigating and, as you say, surveilling this individual. I would
mm-hmm.
think, I'm not a trained police officer or intelligence investigator, but I would think that there would have been a period of surveillance if this is all true, but just
yeah.
after a spy, a foreign
sure.
spy, they would surveil that person for a while and watch them. And I believe, now that you mention it, this source said, we're some of the best surveillance people in the world. People never know we're around watching them. And I think he even mentioned a certain Air Force intelligence wing that are some of the best in the business who nobody will ever know they're being watched or followed. These guys are so good. And this source, I believe, if I recall right, said, yeah, and I'm pretty good too. Nobody will ever know I'm watching them. So I think there was a strong implication that there was a significant surveillance activity before they actually detained him, which, I think is probably standard procedure, I would think.
So this entity apparently looked like a human?
That's what is stated. That's what is stated. That, and it's unclear to me if this is like, what people refer to as a shapeshifter or someone that can disguise themselves. I mean, that's kind of that there was. I'm trying to look at the details. There was an indication, if I remember, that was part of it. Let's see here. Oh, okay.
Well, he was relatively harmless, if I recall right, and he was. It sounded to me from the way you described it in the story or your article. Was that basically he was here, he enjoyed being here, and he was from I can't recall the planet, but it was some planet with a lot of water or something. It was an interesting story. I guess the question that begs to be asked is who's Martinez and what's his motive to release the information? What are your sources telling you about him?
Right. And, I will say Mr. Martinez runs an email He refers to it as a stream list. It's a kind of a voluntary email news service where he has developed a huge list of people, and he sends out information that he thinks will be of interest. Some of it is kind of startling, like these stories. Some of it is more just routine goings-on in society and the latest news and that type of thing. Some of the people on his list are, I believe there was a former CIA director on his list. There are a lot of people, like I said, pretty high up in the scientific community. My understanding is there are a lot of people who are ex-military, including some fairly, you know, well-placed ex-military, and some people in the intelligence community, and people who are in just the area of being involved in some level of interest or activity in some of the forward-leaning or leading-edge scientific activities that include things like we're talking about and other type of things like, you know, discoveries in physics and science and, and things like that, consciousness and life after death and some of these other type of interesting topics.
Sure. Well, you know, the thing that was really interesting about SERPO was I followed it when it first came out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it burst onto the scene like many times these things do in the UFO community.
Yeah.
It burst onto the scene and got a lot of people really excited. And, you know, for a while, and what was it, maybe 2-3 years ago that it came out, we got I got to the point where there was a lot of information put out. And, I mean, I remember reading accounts of what it was like on the planet and what the aliens were like and their religion. And, and so – If you know, it always makes me wonder, and I'm sure this will resonate with Doug as well, how much of it, you know, it was disinformation, and how much of it, where was the kernel of truth in there somewhere? And,
And
you know,
and that's an excellent point, and I think the answer, or just not maybe an answer, but just kicking it around, is interesting, and when it came out. Even on Victor's list of people, of course, there was a lot of discussion that this is BS or this is partly true or it's disinformation or whatever. So this was all discussed by people who are ex-military and those type of people, but have looked into this and are kind of familiar with the general topic. And what I got from it was that there are people in the their former military and so forth that heard rumors and were told things about a story like this long before this Project SERPO thing ever came out 5 years ago. You know, they'd have a buddy or a buddy told a buddy or they'd meet somebody and this story has been around for a while. And of course, it was taught. If it was true, like a lot of things in this area, it would be top secret, and people are not to talk about it under some, you know, pretty significant penalties. But it's been talked about for a while, apparently, and rumors. Some people say there was somebody that whispered in Steven Spielberg's ear about this, and that's why that was incorporated into the movie. There was also an element of disinformation, as you say, Grant, alleged, because people came forward and said, well, yes, some of this is true, but some of this is wrong. Some of this is not accurate. And
Yeah,
and there was discussion, well, you know, which is which and what is what. And my recollection of some of the discussions were that in disinformation, or, you know, disinformation usually has a negative connotation, like someone's trying to pull the wool over your eyes. But truth is mixed in with untruths, and sometimes it's used as a psychological operation to you know, in a negative sense. But the other aspect of this is, and this was brought up in various discussions and people kicking it around, if there is classified information and someone wants to get that information out, either even if it's authorized to get it out, semi-authorized, sort of a gray area whether it's authorized or not, or perhaps one area of our government wants to get it out. Another area does not want to get it out, and that's a whole other issue of when people say the government. The government's made up of a lot of diverse elements, and they're not always on the same page, and they're not always agreeing with each other. So if one element wants to get it out and another element doesn't, and it is classified, if you wanted to release a truthful story, but you had to release it in a way that did not violate the rules, if you released it with enough, I would say, kind of a cover falsehoods in it, in other words, if you release a story and it's not quite truthful, you can say, well, I didn't release any classified information. See, this is inaccurate, and this is inaccurate.
It gives you plausibility, yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't called Project Serpo. It was called Project something else, and it wasn't It wasn't on this date. It was on another date. Then a person could kind of protect themselves legally by saying, I didn't release classified information. I told a story that had a lot of mixed information in it. Another angle could be, well, if you want to release something and get people thinking, you get these kind of controversies going. You put it out there as kind of a mystery. What is true? What is false?
Well, it's a big misdirect. You know, it's a big misdirect. So that, and I mean, and I think that what happens is, and this is just purely my opinion, I think that disinformation has been used to the disadvantage of the UFO community. I think we're all smart. I'm not implying for an instant that the community isn't smart enough to figure it out, because we get bombarded with it all the time. But I you know, when Serpo came out, there was just a tremendous amount of information, and then it crashed and burned. Then the whole thing took a lot of criticism and got bashed pretty badly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the things I was kind of wondering about, I can't remember Bill's last name, the fellow who's with Project Camelot. Didn't he have something to do with a release of that information, too?
Yes, Bill... Bill Ryan. Yes.
Bill Ryan,
For a while, somebody contacted him and said, we want to release information to you as well as to Victor. And there were apparently some, it was unclear, maybe some phony people or people other than Victor's contacts getting involved. I think there's two things that come to mind regarding your very good comments, Grant. Number one was... there was a pushback, I would say, against this story. There was quite a significant effort to discredit this story.
Mm-hmm.
And some people thought this effort to discredit the story was quite well-funded. And this goes back to my point about part of the government may have or former officials may have wanted this released and thought the people had the right to know. Others might have thought, no, we want to keep this under wraps.
Well, sure, in defense of Project Camelot, they've had a lot of whistleblowers come forth.
Yeah.
And if this was a government whistleblower who was legit and, you know, and was actually feeding Bill or somebody else out there some information that was partially accurate, I'm sure they wanted to step on it pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, and there were people who thought that's what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the other thing that comes to mind.
But that would have been a great way to discredit Project Camelot as well, too, had they gone hook, line, and sinker into that.
Well, for some reason, the Project Serpo really seemed to strike a nerve. There was a sudden, apparently well-funded effort to discredit that story. And according to the information that I have.
Well, that doesn't surprise me at all.
Now, the other angle that strikes me is that when we think of the government cover-up, if there is one, about this topic and the history of this whole situation, let's, for the sake of our discussion, say from the Roswell incident in 1947 all the way through the 50s and 60s and so forth, allegedly... there has always been the effort to say, hey, this UFO stuff is not true. What you're seeing is it's not extraterrestrials. Extraterrestrials are not here. These UFOs are not spacecraft or some other kind of unusual craft from some other dimension.
Yeah, they're information gathering devices that the CIA was using. I'm trying to remember the name of their
They're secret spy planes. And many of them might be our own secret spy planes. But the effort to...
Project Mogul, that was what they were using to try to monitor Russians.
Exactly. The history of what people think of as disinformation on this has always been there's nothing to the idea of extraterrestrials or extraterrestrial spacecraft. Now...
But, that's really amazing about it, though, is the fact that here the Air Force denied it in 47... And then over the years, they've still been denying it, you know? It seems like they haven't convinced themselves.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. We've had all this denial. We've had 60 years of at least one level of the federal government or the policy is to deny and that this even is an issue. Now, here's Project Serpo comes out, and not only does it not say – It's not an issue. UFOs don't exist and ETs don't exist. It's saying, yes, they exist. We're dealing with them. We've been dealing with them since Roswell. We've established communications with them and diplomatic relations and a kind of a rapport and liaison. And it's gone so far that we've actually had our guys flying on their spacecraft. So
an exchange program.
An exchange program actually going to their planet. So... You have one, what we usually think of as disinformation or a cover-up in standard terms that there's nothing to it, to this story, which is not only is there something to it, but here's actually the level of progress of the operations, some of the operations that we're involved in with them.
But you know,
that's quite different.
Yeah, and you know, I like to think of it too, though. The pieces all, if you really studied the UFO phenomena from the beginning, or you know, even from, let's not from the beginning, but from 47, there's always these threads of information that say that just what you've alluded to, that there was contact, that it was ongoing. That over the years it was documented through various administrations, during Eisenhower's administration, where supposedly actual meetings, clandestine meetings took place, which was another thing, story that came out all not that too long ago about Eisenhower having a clandestine meeting under the pretense of going to see the dentist when he was in Palm Springs.
Right.
But it's all part of this UFO, what I like to call, and I don't mean it in a denigrating fashion, UFO folklore that, you know, has kind of built itself up. And as we've kind of talked about before, there's got to be some truth in there. The difficulty is separating the wheat from the chaff.
I mean, I think you make a good point that you have to look at the whole picture in total. I mean, if people are looking for real, you know, whatever your bar of evidence is, you know, you may not be able to meet it. I mean, if you need to shake hands with an extraterrestrial, if that's your bar of evidence, or have a photo or something like that, that's kind of a high bar, although there are certainly plenty of photos of apparently of unusual craft that are pretty convincing. To me, if you take the whole body of information, including or especially from some of the reliable sources out there, astronaut Edgar Mitchell, astronaut Cooper, I believe, has made some interesting statements. Plenty of
the whole crew of Apollo 11 saw something. Yeah. Follow them on their way to the moon.
Yeah, plenty of people in the very credible pilots, you know, military pilots and military officers of pretty good rank, and military personnel down the chain, and plenty of reliable citizens all over the world and police officers and you name it. You know, if you really take the whole body of the accounts and evidence and really have a halfway open mind, I think this picture certainly indicates to me that there's something along these lines is clearly going on, and I think the argument that there's a legitimate concern that people might not quite be ready to handle this, and they certainly weren't ready in 1947, maybe, that was one of the reasons, one of the fairly legitimate reasons for some security on this situation. And, of course, there were probably some other reasons, too, like according to the folklore, as you say, there was advanced technology to be had, and, you know, what can these people teach us, and let's us get it, not the Russians, you know, kind of thing.
So there's
a lot of reasons for security and secrecy, and so to me, it clearly seems that something along these lines is going on. The Project Serpo story and this Tango Sierra, you know, like I said, I have no way of knowing how much truth is in either one of them, but the Project Serpo thing was kicked around quite a bit more, as I said, and there are some indications to me that there's could be some truth to it, as amazing as that may seem.
All right, we have a caller that would like to ask a question or make a comment. Bill from Mount Pleasant, Illinois, are you with us?
Yeah, that sounds better. Mount Prospect, but Pleasant sounds good, too.
Oh, Mount Pleasant.
Hey, welcome.
Wrong state.
It's all right. That's okay.
Welcome to the show, Bill.
Yeah, I heard. Yeah, right. Good to hear you there, Steve. I just got to hear about his broadcast before it went on the air, and I was here, so I'm glad to hear it. I wanted to offer that I'm with a parapsychology group called Spindrift Research here in Chicago. It's been doing experiments with thought and consciousness since 1969. In case anybody wants to look it up, it's www.spindriftresearch.org. Spindrift, Spindrift.
Okay.
Spindrift is a nautical term. It has to do with the spray on the top of a wave during a hurricane or a cyclone.
Okay.
Spindriftresearch.org. But one of our main theories is there's so much paranormal activity going around us all the time and people having these UFO experiences, et cetera. Why don't we have more evidence of it? And through a lot of subtle experiments with random numbers and things that I won't go into, we have a theory about the defense mechanisms of the mind and conspiracies that actually are occurring in consciousness to hinder us from verifying that we're having a paranormal experience. So I wanted to offer that the reason, not only is this just disinformation, the people who are doing the disinformation themselves are being dissed because there is this sidetracking always of not being able to pin anything down of anything that has to do with the paranormal. It doesn't matter what it is. And we can speculate why that is, but it's an interesting study just in itself to see not why paranormal evidence exists, but why it is always so sabotaged. That in itself shows you something's going on. It's because it's consistently so.
Yes, I would agree. So you're saying, Bill, that the people who are dissonant or who are sabotaging it are being, I don't know, manipulated, is for lack of a
better term. Yes, we all are. We are. They are too. And of course, they may know something. But it's funny. It's one thing for an individual to know something. That's fine. But to actually get more people to do it on a collective basis, this is when you get into trouble. For instance, if an individual has a really strong psychic or paranormal experience, that's fine. That's fine. That's not really going to, that person can believe it. But when you go out and try to share that, and then you go beyond yourself to actually show that there's something here that's real, and you start talking about it, this is when the sabotage takes place.
Do you have any comments on that, Steve?
Well, I think Bill gets into a very interesting and relevant area, and that is human consciousness, which, of course, we all have because we're thinking and aware and living and looking around and experiencing life. Human consciousness itself is quite a mystery. Even to people who study psychology in the conventional way, some of the theories of Carl Jung, a famous psychiatrist, and others, point out that human consciousness is, there's, of course, the theory that we're all connected in some way deep down. there's a feeling that among many people that the conscious mind is connected to the unconscious mind. The unconscious mind is connected to a deeper mind that we might call the soul. And then you keep going and you're connected to something further. And, of course, this was this has come up in another secret government project that we know is would seem far-fetched if you told someone about it 10 years ago, but we now know it's true, and that was Project Stargate about remote viewing. And, you know, there are connections and parallels between the Project Stargate remote viewing activity and other anomalous or unconventional subjects. And for people who are not familiar with remote viewing and Project Stargate, this was a program developed in the 1970s in response to intelligence that the Russians, the Soviets, were using psychic and paranormal activities to do things with their minds and gather information with their minds. And
to assassinate.
What's that?
Yeah.
And some of them are trying to use mental means to assassinate people, too.
Yeah, as a weapon.
Yeah,
that,
yep. Yeah.
And
I have a question for the gentleman that called in. And my question would be, because, you know, I'm sure you must be familiar with the works of Jacques Vallée, and Jacques Vallée kind of refers to whatever is going on as he says he's reluctant to even tag it as being extraterrestrial. He thinks it may be something that we've lived in tandem with here for a long, long time. And my question to you is it possible that we can't see the forest through the trees because we're part of it?
I would, if I can understand what you're saying, the problem is how we're made up. It seems like our own subconscious mind sabotages us. So we heard about Sigmund Freud, brought up by Steve. Sigmund Freud's one of his big theories was the defense mechanisms of the mind, and this is something we go into, how our defense mechanisms for the forest of the trees are working against us. I don't know if it's to protect us or it's to stop us from knowing there's other realms, but a lot of times this happens. I can give you an example from yesterday. I talked to a gal I know, and she had told me about this psychic experience she had a year ago, and I hadn't talked to her in a long time, and I didn't bring this up until yesterday, and I brought it up to her again yesterday, and she said she didn't know what I was talking about. She completely forgot about it and thought I was making it up. It was completely wiped from her mind. And it was a very dramatic thing, and she shared it with me, and she doesn't even remember it. She thinks I'm pulling her leg. You know, why did these things happen? You know, she's the one that had the experience, and she forgot it.
Yeah, well, you know, that fits into what, like, Jacques Vallée said. They're the trickster.
The trickster has been involved in this, yes.
Yeah, and
it's
almost like always tantalizing glimpses, but never anything definitive, anything that you can nail down.
You got it. It's the trickster.
Right, and for people, listeners who are not familiar with that trickster concept, I mean, that goes way back into Native American legends and lore and viewpoints, and I believe some other cultures too, that there is an element or a consciousness or an intelligence or a way the universe works that is a trickster. It's behind the scenes, it's secretive, it's a mystery, and it kind of messes with your mind, and it provokes change. And
beautifully put, this is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah,
so it's very difficult job to be in this area of research, because all the time we're being misdirected and sidetracked and sabotaged and tricksterized.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and
yeah.
I think one element to consider is, you know, we modern people, and I don't know if Americans are any different than others, but we want answers. We want to know, is something or is it not? Is it this? Is it that? We want to know the facts. And some things by their nature, and I'm not saying that all this, every single thing that we've talked about needs to be like this, but some things are mysterious by nature. People often say, you know, if you believe in a higher intelligence, that higher intelligence works in mysterious ways. That's the old quote.
Right.
And we some people who believe in angels. Angels work in mysterious ways and very secretive, covert ways. If you believe in them, and of course this kind of takes us back around to the idea you guys talked about that. Part of this may be there's extraterrestrials, there are people that actually come from another planet. They're biological beings like we are, but maybe quite different. There might be other things going on, too, that are of a nature that are, we could say spiritual, or we could say they're in a realm of science that are quite different, some type of energy, some type of intelligence that we don't understand, that they are it's something other than or in addition to actual biological beings that are have very sophisticated spacecraft, or some combination of both. There might be.
Well, you know, the thing that's really interesting is that if you look at the universe as a multiverse, and we've talked about this on a show many times before, if you look at it as a multiverse, and no, this may sound rather simple, maybe at the plane that we're on right now, and what our mental capacities are, our ability to interpret reality, maybe it's not in our best interest to know what the trickster is all about.
Or the trickster thinks it isn't. The trickster wants us to think that.
Absolutely. That's the flip side of the coin, okay? That's the flip side of the coin, and the trickster always keeps us in that position so we can never change. But I also think that the universe, life probably wouldn't be, and this is, this is my personal viewpoint, life probably wouldn't be quite so interesting if it wasn't so mysterious. And so maybe
I think it would be mysterious, without the trickster element.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah.
Well, I think you guys bring up a good point that relates to human nature and our current development of our human the human species. And of course, humans there's quite a big range of human development on our planet. I mean, there's people that we might think are pretty intelligent and highly involved and good, decent, sensitive people. And there are people who are not there either. They're a different type. So there's quite
Amen,
a wide
brother.
Spectrum. There's quite a wide spectrum in the human condition. And are we, the idea of are we ready to know? Are some of us ready to know? Or can we handle or wrap our minds around some of these areas that are going to kind of change our perspective of what reality is? Some of us probably can, and some of us probably can't. And of course, there are very good people, and there seem to be some very bad people out there too. So there's.
I always thought, and I've told this to Doug, and I've said it on the show before. My feeling is that if CNN or Fox News or one of them announced 10 minutes from now that aliens were about to land on the planet, everything would be in an uproar for about the first 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, the apple cart would be back to where it was.
Especially in light of the Vatican.
People are going to keep on believing whatever they're going to believe. That's not, it won't shatter anything. I think there's a lot of folks out there that are absolutely perfectly intelligent enough and capable enough to accept the truth. Yes, evolved enough. Thank you, Doug. For lack of better words, yeah, that could handle it. But, we also have to remember, too, that the government in 1962, I believe, did the Brookings Report. And that's been there. It's written in stone that any interaction between, and Stephen Hawking talked about this just recently, any interaction between a more advanced technological civilization and a lesser advanced technological civilization, we end up the lesser being the loser. And the best example of that would be when the Spanish came to the New World.
Sure.
I thought maybe Stephen Hawking, when he said that, I was wondering if he was watching this TV series V when he got this idea.
He might have been. Maybe he's got a pet parrot at home.
Yes. And, of course, when we talk about how people would react and so forth, I think it bears discussing, and this dovetails exactly with Stephen Hawking's comment. We may be, and as I mentioned earlier, we might be dealing with kind of a multifaceted situation here where there could be some friendly aliens, there could be some very hostile aliens doing some bad things, there could be entities or energies that are good or some kind of anomalous, unusual intelligences or beings of various kinds that might be good. There might be some that are not good, and how people are going to react could very much depend on what the nature of the situation is, and a whole spectrum of situations might be going on. Let's say for the sake of argument, and this was kind of mentioned in this Tango Sierra thing, but other people have mentioned it, that there allegedly could be some type of alien beings of whatever nature you want to describe them that are want to be helpful to the human race. They're good. They're more highly evolved. They're positive. There are tales and stories that there are some that are quite dangerous to us and harmful and doing things that would be possibly quite frightening and very disturbing. So
I think it's really difficult to hear. I think where we fall, one of the biggest pitfalls for us is the fact that we like to extrapolate on stuff that we can't even fathom.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have the slightest idea what an alien would think. And for people to think that, you know, and I'm kind of in agreement with Stephen Hawking from the standpoint that, you know what, you may have a space-faring civilization out there that doesn't give a tinker's damn about taking a planet and stripping it of all of its natural resources and the hell with the culture there. We have no idea.
No.
What a different civilization might think. And just because they happen to be technologically advanced doesn't mean that they are spiritually advanced. You know, I think of it in terms of a hive mentality
humanity fits in with that paradigm.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Bill, we really appreciate you calling in. If you will hang on the line for just a moment, we'd appreciate that. Excellent information. Very, very thought-provoking. But if you'll hang on the line,
you,
John's
Bill.
Got a question for you. All right. Thanks, Bill.
Thank you. Good night.
Yeah, hang on the line.
Right.
So a couple of questions in the chat room. Steve. I'm looking at them. One comment is it seems as though the sightings are becoming more intense in spite of the government's efforts to suppress what's going on. Any comments on that?
Well, I guess I'm not sure if the sightings are becoming more intense or if people are just more willing to step forward and report them, and there's more reporting methods through the internet, and there's more people with camcorders, and you can put videos on YouTube, and
some more awareness.
Yeah, I mean that's hard to say if it is becoming more intense. I mean that's certainly possible. This goes back to our earlier conversation and what we've been leading up to in a way is are we being prepared for further revelations or more acceptance or this coming out of the shadows a little bit more. And I think I think with all the TV shows and all the tales that maybe the government has been trying to acclimate us for many decades by planting ideas in Hollywood's head and whispering in people like Steven Spielberg's ear, that it's quite possible there has been an acclimation process to prepare us mentally and emotionally for something along these lines. And
I think you may be right because I mean, look at the way that we view aliens. Say how a person would have viewed an alien in 1955, okay? And then you look at how do you think they would look at them as largely being malevolent, coming here to invade. And being absolutely ruthless. And then as time evolved, by the time we got into the 1960s, we were now looking at it as, well, maybe perhaps they'd be more benevolent and maybe, you know, an advanced culture would have certain characteristics. And now here we are in the first decade of, the 21st century, and I think people are fairly desensitized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah,
nothing's going to shock them, I don't think.
And the kids especially, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Because they've grown up with,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, of course there's aliens. There's aliens on Saturday morning cartoons. And
They think it's real.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, everywhere else. Yeah, and the other issue is, if there are friendly aliens and they have come around and been watching us for some length of time or whatever, you know, they may not think too highly of the way this planet's being run.
Well, yeah, I don't blame them.
You know, absolutely.
There's people living in abject poverty. There's people dying of starvation. There's terrible inequities of various kinds and a lot of human suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And they may say, gee, like, who's running the show here? This
put us in quarantine is more likely
the
situation.
Yeah, this place is a mess.
Yeah.
And, you know, so that's an element to consider. And the other thing I was thinking about when we're talking about what the different scenarios might be, and they could be complex, let's say that there are different types of entities around, of all different types. It's just like in our conventional politics and military affairs. I mean, you have some countries that are your friends. You have some that are your enemies, you have some that are kind of halfway in between, you have spies conducting all kind of covert activities, and then you've got components within components of countries and societies and areas, and, you know, it's not real simple, just in our geopolitics and the security matters, just dealing with other humans. And, you know, if there's a kind of a spectrum of different types of other beings, they may be not only interacting with us in different ways, they may be interacting with each other. I mean, there has been scuttlebutt that one type of extraterrestrial being says, hey, watch out for this other type, they're bad news. And they have, according to some of the stories, you know, they may have kind of tentative or even hostile relations amongst each other. It may not be some harmonious galactic federation, and they're all getting along great.
All right, here's
of course, and you know the other thing that I was going to say, just one second, Doug, was the fact that was what I found intriguing about Tango Sierra, was because if what you said is true, then why wouldn't we be infiltrated?
Yeah, yeah. That's the way things work. You know, you don't always just land on the White House lawn and say, hey, we're here. You know, you go in and people who are, you know, in the certain elements of the military or intelligence or whatever, you sneak into places. You don't just walk in the front door. You sneak in and you maintain a low profile and you blend in and you gather information and you kind of learn the ropes about the area you're looking at.
All right. We are coming down on our last couple of minutes or so. And so as far as a last quick question, Steve, you know, what value is Project Serpo and Tango Sierra to UFO research? I mean, what does it tell us? What are the lessons to be learned?
Well, as I mentioned, I think it's interesting that unlike other statements coming out from alleged government sources that there's nothing to this UFO phenomenon, these stories say there is definitely something to it, and it's quite detailed. That leads to the possibility, which is certainly clear, that some very responsible, patriotic Americans who have served in our government and in our defense community are trying to tell us something.
Okay.
And this may be part of that. And Edgar Mitchell and many other, as I said, military people and so forth, they're trying to tell us something. And these stories may be part of that.
All right. Well, very good. If you'll hang with us just a moment, we're coming back up on our last minute here. And I just want to let everybody know that next week, June 3rd, the show will be Cryptid Research Investigation in Ohio with Jody Cook. That show is going to be hosted by our own Brian Parsons. And so please be sure to tune in for that one. On the agenda coming up the week following, we've got Orbs Infrasound and EVP with Steve Parsons. We've got some more shows on EVP. We've got Travis Walton coming in to the show in July. We've got Dr. David Lewis Anderson coming back in July to talk more about time control. So a lot of different things coming up. If you haven't had a chance to visit Paranexus.org, please do so. We are an association of anomalous researchers, and we're a place to share and grow, and we hope you come. Steve, so thanks so much for joining us tonight. We appreciate your time. And everybody else, thanks so much for joining us. Have a great night.
Thank you, Steve. It was a pleasure.
Thanks, guys.
Sky. It's Paranexus Universe.